Back to the Book Show. I'm Alex.
And I'm Jack.
We're talking to Andrew Carroll, editor of War Letters. And we're having a fascinating conversation, folks. But before we get back to Andrew, let me do our sponsors real quick. We are sponsored by eNovel.com, a great place to get published and a great place to read and buy books. That's right. Luray Cavern. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. Hope you visit. And
the, millions of years old.
Millions of years old. Patina Grill, located on the far west end of Richmond, off
awesome
of Lauderdale.
Food.
Bookbinders Restaurant. And Pages Magazine, the magazine for people who love books. Andrew, you're with us.
Good to be back.
Andrew, quick question for you. You said you don't publish any letters that are published elsewhere.
Right.
How do you verify that? For instance, I was just curious. I noticed you had one in here from Robert E. Lee's family, and I just finished going through a whole book, a thick book, and I can't tell if this one was in it or not, of letters from Robert E. Lee and his back and forth to his wife. And, I mean,
with the famous people, it is a little harder to verify. In that case, we talk with the people who contribute the letters. For example, we have some letters by William Tecumseh Sherman in the book, and they were given to us by a collector who says that no one's ever seen these letters because they've been passed down in his family, and they've never been released before. And, again, one of the benefits is since we never told anyone, since we didn't ourselves know there was going to be a book done of these, we never said we're doing a book and there's any money involved or there's any fame or anything like that. It's just, you know, we're looking for letters. If you have something, send it to us. So in that first batch, there was no suspicion, really, that anyone was trying to run us. And this has been in our attic, or this was my great-grandfather's, or this is a letter my dad wrote, this letter I wrote. And so we could just confirm with the families they've never shown it to anyone before.
Right. Okay, I was just curious.
No, it's a good question. Yeah. I think authenticity is a big part of what we're, you know, we want to be careful of that now because the book is a little better known, and we hope to do future books, and I can't emphasize enough, we are still very urgently looking for letters from any different war, and especially from the most recent war, and I know you all have a great military community there, a lot of veterans, and any help that people can give us in finding great letters, great stories, and emails, especially from Afghanistan, you know, just go to warletters.com, or if you have the book, at the very last page of the book has our address and where to reach us.
Exactly. We'll post something on our website also.
Oh, great.
Thank
you.
Know about that.
Well, Andrew, what is the future book going to be? What are you guys thinking of?
What I'm thinking of doing now, it's a book called Behind the Lines, and it'll be like War Letters, all new selection, and the two differences are there'll be more stories about the letters themselves, and like the fact that the Tojo letter was bought for 50 cents at a yard sale, or just some of the background of who the people were. One of the best letters in the book was written by a Korean War veteran on behalf of a friend of his who went off and actually essentially got himself killed. He had received a Dear John letter, and this guy was just so despondent. His comrade, helped him write a letter back to the woman who had left him, and then this guy went off and attacked a machine gun nest and was killed. Al is one of the most brilliant writers I have ever come across, and he lives in New Jersey. He cleans parking lots there, and he's a very quiet, unassuming man, and he has all these incredible stories. And it wasn't possible to tell those stories or the aftermath of these, you know, the letters or the wars. And so it's going to weave in more sort of personal anecdotes. And then the big addition we're going to do is add letters from other countries and what the Russians were writing, what the Germans were writing, what Japanese were writing.
That would be awesome. Now
that would be really cool.
And to do the book thematically, we do war letters by war. So it's, you know, Civil War start to finish, World War One start to finish, et cetera. This would be thematically. So the first chapter is on, you know, letters on heading out. How are Russian soldiers, when they headed out, different from American soldiers or North Vietnamese or whatever? And it's not to give any of our enemies a platform, but to show the human side of it. And veterans have actually been the ones encouraging me the most to say, show the letters from the other side, what they were writing home.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. In the wake of September 11th, have you given any thought to trying to compile letters from, you know, relatives or survivors of that?
Well, we have. It's just like people ask me the relevancy of that, and I say, well, it's just like the letters on the home front from December 7th, 1941. Those are as historic as the letters written by the troops stationed at Pearl Harbor. You know, what were the thoughts, fears, concerns of those living just in the United States when we had blackouts and threats of attacks and so forth? And we're going through the exact same thing right now. We've received some very powerful letters and emails that were written right after 9/11, people in New York who wrote home, who, you know, they had anxious these could be, you know, 30-20-year-old kids working in New York who had anxious parents across the states, you know, are you okay, where are you, what happened? And they would write these gripping letters back to their parents about being in the streets of New York, watching a plane hit, watching the towers collapse, and just the drama of it, and just the emotional impact of that. And those letters are extremely powerful. And so I think I'd probably more incorporate it into the next book, but the letters that, again, we most want to find are the ones by anyone serving or who has served in the war on terrorism, whether it's in Afghanistan or on a warship or off in the Philippines or wherever they may be.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you to back up a little bit. The issue of censoring.
Yes.
It seems during World War I, World War II, that many of the letters were censored. And you indicated in the headnotes if a letter was not censored, I think. But what, I guess, you know, what role did censoring play, and how do you think it affected the content of the letters that you got?
We were very lucky because we had so many letters to choose from, and the World War One and World War II were the censored wars. Civil War, Vietnam, Korea were not censored. Right. The current war, there is censorship, which is understandable, and we've seen that in the emails we've been getting already. And we're respectful of people's privacy. We take out their names if they want. We'll do it. You know, the families control what ultimately is used. But back to your question, I think what's interesting is that the letters get, in some ways, more philosophical because they can't describe certain things about combat, and so they sort of describe how they're feeling about it. And we still, though, despite censorship, have some very intense letters because they either would write the letter right after the battle happened and then hold on to it for a year and then mail it, or they'd give a letter to a friend, it would get smuggled back to the States when the friend was returning home, or it was the censors themselves. We have a couple letters like that where the officers, the censors would write home, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but here's what's really going on.
I see.
And so I was afraid that for the World War One and World War Two letters, they'd be very dull, very sort of antiseptic, because they couldn't tell a lot of details. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that they're some of the most gripping letters we have.
Right. One letter in particular, well, there are a bunch of letters that really struck me, but the letter written to President Roosevelt by William Patrick Hitler.
Yes.
The sole surviving relative of Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, his nephew.
Right, and he was asking the president for assistance in enlisting in the military, correct?
Yeah, he had been over in England, and then he eventually emigrated to the United States during the war, and he wanted to join the U.S. Navy, which he eventually did, but Roosevelt had Hoover check him out first just to make sure it wasn't a ploy. And this young nephew really detested his uncle, but he was the nephew. And it's one of those sort of forgotten stories of the war, and I love those kind of stories that you think, Mike, how could this not be a bigger deal?
Right.
And there it is. We have a lot of somewhat famous people. Julia Child's sister sent me some of Julia Child's letters. She served in the OSS during World War II. And we have a letter by a young George Bush, 22 years old, mm-hmm. Writing to his folks after he was shot down. Yep. And for me, one of the most historically interesting letters, a young George McGovern, also 22 years old, talking about how he would vote for Dewey over FDR. Mm. Now, here's the guy who was tagged as a peacenik, anti-war liberal, who was actually a legitimate World War II hero, who actually loathed the Democrats. Mm. So it's very interesting to see how he transformed over the years as well.
Right. The tenor of the letters from soldiers in the Vietnam War, to me, tended to be a little bit different than the other wars. It seemed like the soldiers were expressing a little bit more anger at not knowing why they were fighting or for whom they were fighting or what the cause was about. Now, did you get that impression?
Yeah, and that was not something I think I imposed on the book. I really tried to show the letters as they, you know, were representative of a whole and thematically. But what's interesting and what really surprised me was I thought the letters would be divisive from the very beginning. From the first guys who went off there, there'd be grumblings and why are we doing this? But actually there's a great sense of enthusiasm just the way it is in other wars. And conversely, I was surprised by the end of World War One and the end of World War Two that there was that same kind of anger about war. Not that they didn't believe in the nobility of the cause, that they weren't doing a good thing and fighting for freedom and for justice, mm-hmm. but just of how is it that the Japanese, the Germans, those civilizations forced us into this position, and how is it that this is how groups of humans solve their problems? And, I mean, you talk to any combat veteran, and they'll be the first to say how much they hate war
right.
and how you need to do everything to stop it. But then I think with the book does not come down on a political side. It's I hope, a very patriotic book. The whole purpose is to honor those who serve, mm-hmm. but it's very honest in how it portrays war. It doesn't gloss over or romanticize war, and that's something the veterans emphasized to me time and time again. Do not make it pretty.
The veterans who sent you these letters, why did they do it? What's the overriding reason?
I think the majority were sent in by the family members, the grown children, the nephews, the grandchildren, and the consistent theme was, I just want someone to remember what my dad, my uncle, my grandmother, whomever it may be, did, mm-hmm. because they never talk about it. And you will hear that from just every combat veteran and so forth, from their family members. You know, my grandfather never talked about the war.
I see. So it's their legacy.
And that's why we call it the Legacy Project, is that we want this to be their legacy. And what better way than through their own words? This is not my filtering it as a historian or a journalist. It's just, this is exactly what they wrote at the time. These letters are not reminiscent. This is not, Dear Andy, 50 years ago I was at D-Day, here's what happened. Mm-hmm. It's, Dear Mom, June 6, 1944, just got off the boat, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, and that's what makes them so riveting.
All right. Andrew, do you have any favorite letter or a couple of favorite letters?
Well, my favorite letter is probably the last letter of the book. Okay. And I don't know how much time we have. I could, you know, go through some of it. It's a more recent letter.
Real quick, because we'll have to wind you up in just a minute.
Well, I'll just summarize it. It's a Major Tom O'Sullivan writing to his son from Bosnia. His son had his 7th birthday. O'Sullivan couldn't be there, and so he sent him an American flag. And it sounds corny, but it's one of the most beautiful letters I've ever written. He said, we raise this flag over our camp here in Bosnia Herzegovina in your honor, and you keep it and you honor it always. Love, Dad. And it's one of the most, and just the way he describes the flag and what it means to him and to the people of Bosnia for bringing peace and freedom, it's just so beautifully written.
Well, I'll tell you, I read a lot of wonderful letters here. It's fantastic, and I'm this really is probably one of the most moving books I've ever read. Thank you very much for joining us, Andrew.
Listen, I appreciate it. Thank you all.
Yeah, and look, Andrew, when you get further into your next book, and especially when you complete it, we'd love to have you back on the book show.
It'll be my pleasure, and we're doing a big project to give out free books to the troops this November. It's a whole new effort to bring back the Armed Services editions, and we're doing it this fall.
Excellent.
All right, listen, thank you all very much.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew. Take care.
Bye now.
That's Andrew Carroll, editor of War Letters, and as Andrew said,
it's a must have. You've got to get this book.
Yeah, this book is fantastic, and you'll find it at all of your major bookstore chains. And also, if
does it have a price on it? I was just curious. I mean, it's a nice size book. Or a lot.
It is a nice size. I said big trade paperback. It's $16, and of course, there are a lot of discounts that you can get. So right. I bet you could probably get it for $12, $13.
Does that say it is a New York Times bestseller on front?
Yes, it does. New York Times bestseller. And if you have a letter that was written by, a family member or somebody that you know, as Andrew said, go to warletters.com. And you'll find out how you can submit that letter. They do not want originals, and I know that feeling. Do not send originals, folks. Make copies of your letter.
I wonder if you could scan it in and just email it to them.
I don't know. I guess we'll go to warletters.com.
We'll check it out. Yes. Yeah. Actually, I'm going to put it up on the webpage.
And we'll check it out.
I've got to go in and make some updates to it.
I guess we're going to take a short break.
Real short.
Okay, we're going to take a real short break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about America's best-selling books and a few other odds and ends. This is The Book Show. And we're talking about books. We want to talk to you. Give us a call. It's 788-0990. We'll be right back. A murder, a mystery where everybody bleeds. A fantasy, a thriller with romance and disease. Diary entry 9th of May 62. We've had some ugly babies, but now we're quite. Diary entry 62, end of May. It looks as if the nose and chin are definitely here to stay.
Mazda Madness has been extended with bigger savings, better financing on over 200 new Mazdas on the lot right now at Capital Mazda on West Broad and Parham Road. Get bigger deals, lower financing, and larger rebates right now during Capital Mazda's Mazda Madness sale. Get 0% financing for over 60 months on new Mazda Protégés, low monthly payments, and save over $6,500 on new Mazda Millennias during the extended Mazda Madness sale at Capital Mazda. Get 0% financing on new Mazda Protégés and B-Series
these trucks for 60 months. Get a new Mazda Tribute SUV for only $16,945 and save over $6,500 on new Mazda Millennias right now. It's Mazda Madness all month long at Capital Mazda on West Broad at Parham Road. With a huge selection of new Mazdas, over 200 on the lot right now. With so many Mazdas, you're sure to find the model and color of your choice. So don't miss Mazda Madness at Capital Mazda West Broad and Parham Road.
Excludes tax, title, tags, and $189 processing fee with approved credit.
Old Original Bookbinders opened their first location in Richmond at 2306 East Carey Street in a renovated tobacco warehouse in historic Chaco Bottom. The Richmond location carries on many of the traditions that the original restaurant was founded and built upon. The menu combines traditional dishes like oysters Rockefeller and seafood imperial with innovative preparations like pan-seared sea bass with wild mushrooms and crispy onions. The regular menu offers fresh seafood, including a large selection of fresh fish and shellfish, prime beef, and live Maine lobster prepared simply with different sauces. The daily specials offer their chefs an opportunity to express their creative flair with innovative, unusual, and delicious preparations of soups, appetizers, entrees, and desserts. Call for reservations, 643-6900. Again, that's 643-6900. Old Original Bookbinders has been well received in Richmond. They are proud to establish their first new location right here in Richmond, 643-6900, for the Old Original Bookbinders.
Welcome back to the Book Show. I'm Alex.
And I'm Jack.
We were talking to Andrew Carroll, editor of War Letters. It was a very interesting interview, I thought. Anyway, we're going to do...
And we'll put the interview online also on our website, bookshow.com.
That's right. We're going to do America's best-selling books, according to the USA Today. We're going to do...
Drum roll, please.
We're going to do the top 10, okay? Starting at number 10. Are you ready?
Go ahead.
Whisper of Evil by Kay Hooper.
Tell us where they were last week, if you can.
It's a fiction book, by the way. It's ranked number 7, so it dropped to number 10.
Okay.
Number 9, Romancing Mr. Bridgerton by Julia Quinn. It's a romance book, and it's also a fictional work.
I must be out of the loop. Keep going.
All right. Number 8, Face the Fire by Nora Roberts.
Okay, I've heard that one.
How many books has Nora Roberts written?
Know.
Incredible. She is a machine, folks. Number 7, Dr. Atkins' New Diet Revolution. This one just shot up the charts. It was number 71 last week.
I can't tell you how many of my friends have done the diet. And it's the only diet that I know that actually I've seen the results with my friends. Everyone has tried it. It's lost weight.
Dr. Atkins?
Yes.
By Robert C. Atkins. How to Kickstart Your Metabolism to Burn More Calories. This is nonfiction. Really?
Yes. Absolutely.
Are these women friends?
No, mostly guys, actually.
Mostly guys.
And it is phenomenal. It's the total opposite of everything you've learned.
Wow. All right, well, number 6, The Beach House by James Patterson. Yeah, that was like
number...
In
fact, we got book at Book Expo. We even got the audio version of that.
You're right. That was number 4 last week, dropped to number 6. Number 5 was also number 5 a week ago, Hemlock Bay by Catherine Coulter.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fictional book. It's about an FBI agent is on the case after his sister's in a suspicious car wreck. Number 4, The Lovely Bones by Alice Siebold, another fictional work. It's about a murdered girl who peers down from heaven to narrate this story. Wow.
Okay.
Number 3, and it was number 2 last week, Divine Secrets of the Yaya Sisterhood.
That one, yes.
By Rebecca Wells. Daughter must come to terms with her mother. Wow. I don't know. It's a fictional work. And number 2, the second best-selling book in America, according to the USA Today, The Remnant, On the Brink of Armageddon, by Tim LaHaye. It was number 1 last week.
That sounds more like my action thriller, but go ahead.
Armies of God prepare for mankind's ultimate battle. That's what it's about. And the number 1 book in America, according to the USA Today, is A Bend in the Road, by Nicholas Sparks, a fictional work, and the... Synopsis's secret threatens love between widower divorced women. I don't know. that's what the USA Today says, folks. A Bend in the Road by Nicholas Sparks.
Someone's buying it.
Somebody's got to be buying it. It's
good
number
or not,
one.
We'll see how well it stays
number
up
one according
there.
To the USA Today. And that's the top 10.
Let's go real quick because we're out of time, but okay. I want to let everyone know you can go to our website, thebookshow.com, contest information, not only our contest, but other contests where you can enter. First one, Boston Review 10th Annual Short Story Contest. guidelines. Published a work 2002. It's on the website. Go there. It's too long for me to read right now because we're out of time. New York Stories Fiction Prize 2002. Deadline August 31st. $500 in prizes. Not to exceed 6,500 words. And Mocha Memoirs Short Story Contest. Deadline August 1st, 2002. Again, all the information is at thebookshow.com. Click contest, and you can get the information there. Always be a new contest to enter, at least three new ones a week, so always take a look there.
That's right. Thanks to our sponsors, Pages Magazine, the magazine for people who love books, enovel.com. Go to www.enovel.com for books and more. Also, Patina Grill on the west end of Richmond, Bookbinders Restaurant in Tobacco Row, and Luray Cavern. Enjoy the show, folks. I'm going to be on vacation next week, so it's just going to
be here.
Yeah, it's going to be Jack.
With some surprise guests.
Yeah, surprise
live guests.
Have a great week, folks. It's going to be The Red Church, a mystery horror novel next week with Jack. Thanks, everyone. Take care.